Agenda item 8, State Forest Annual Operation Plan Process Overview. Liz Dent will be our main presenter on this item, and so we'll turn it over to you, Liz.
Great. Thank you, Tom. It's good to be here with you all today. For the record, my name is Liz Dent. I'm the State Forest Division Chief, and joining me here at the table is Ron Zilli. He is our Deputy Division Chief of Planning and Coordination. This may sound as a bit of a surprise to you because you're used to Brian being introduced as the Deputy Division Chief. With our reorganization that we've done with State Forests, we centralized planning and created another deputy position. And so Ron oversees the planning and coordination for the work that we do annually and the way that we think about that in the context of our longer-term implementation plans. So it's good to have Ron here today. He's been with the agency for 25 years or so. So new to this position, but has been around for a long time, including quite a bit of field time. Before I get started, I do want to just take a minute and echo the comments of our state forester that were made in his opening comments. So as we meet here today to discuss our Oregon State Forest, many of our minds are on the broader societal issues that command our attention. All of us in public service must do, and our agency is committed to, doing our part to address and dismantle institutional racism that was most recently expressed and seen with the murder of George Floyd. As managers of public lands, we are committed to an environment of racial justice and equity. So as we think about the management of those lands, the planning for and then implementation of those operations plays out in several ways. So we're going to go through some of this with you today. This is an information item on our fiscal year 21 annual operation plans, and it's on the agenda today at the request of the board, and specifically wanting to understand the planning process and the public comments that were received on these, what we characterize, or what we shorthand, if you will, as AOPs. So you may find us fall into that language that simply means annual operation plans. So to walk through this today, I'm going to give a brief overview of the planning hierarchy and relationships between our various planning levels, and then Ron is going to talk more specifically about our annual operations and planning processes, and at a high level characterize the public comments that we've received on these annual operating plans. We are in the midst of fully evaluating those public comments and forming our responses. And so anything that we're able to put on the table today, I just want to be clear, is preliminary in nature in terms of responses to public comments. So with that, I'll get started. The graphic before you characterizes the relationship of our forest management plan, characterized there as FMP, our implementation plans, or our IPs, and our annual operating plans, or our AOPs. So I'll start with the forest management plans. Those are both temporally and spatially at a large scale. Those are adopted and approved by the Board of Forestry. And so we manage these lands under three forest management plans on the west side, and then a forest management plan, another one on the east side. They basically, they're a strategic plan that is actually adopted as an Oregon administrative rule and characterizes and lays out how that rule will achieve greatest permanent value. As I said, they're long-range plans, considered to be applicable for at least 20 to 25 years. The plan has several important elements, and we've been working with the board for probably close to 8 years on thinking about a revision to the forest management plan. So I think you're familiar with what's in our forest management plan, but they are highlighted there as our guiding principles, our goals, strategies, And then a set of guidelines for our how we construct and what needs to be in our implementation plans, as well as guidelines for asset management and adaptive management. And the plans also describe implementation levels. And we've talked with the board a little bit about that. And that's a recognition in the forest management plan that there are at times trade-offs depending on the financial circumstances within which we're managing these forests. So those are the forest management plans, again, adopted by the Board of Forestry. The next scale is our implementation plans, and those are at a smaller temporal and spatial scale. Right now, we're writing them at the district level, and they're envisioned as 10-year plans, although there are options at times to do modifications to those plans. Those implementation plans are approved by the state forester. We think of those as more tactical rather than the larger strategic or policy level that you have in the forest management plan. And they're designed to achieve the goals of the forest management plan. They're district specific, and they're what we would consider mid-range, again, this sort of 10-year time frame. IPs contain district overviews of key resources, management opportunities, average annual harvest objectives, current forest structure conditions, and our desired future forest conditions. And then we tier down to the last level, which is our annual operating plans. Those are approved by the district forester. And as the name suggests, they're written on an annual basis at this point, so much shorter term. And they are geared towards achieving the implementation plan objectives, and they're district specific. Some of the information that's in our AOPs includes the description of harvest operations and forest projects, so specific timber sales, habitat improvement projects, young stand management, recreation, road management, types of projects, and monitoring and research, to name a few. I don't have my clicker. Oh, Ron has it. Okay. So just to walk through an example of how these relate to each other, and again, with the design being that by the time we get down to the annual operating plans, that they are in alignment with the higher level policies and strategies described in the forest management plan. So for an example, in the forest management plan, it establishes a long-term goal to create a desired future condition of 30% to 50% of the landscape to be in layered or older forest structure. We roll those together, and we often talk about that in terms of DFC complex. So you might have heard that conversation over the years. The plan contemplates how that management will occur to achieve that goal, and what is prohibitive and what is allowed. So it basically establishes that we'll retain all existing old growth, both individual trees and stands, and that existing older forest structure, where mapped, meaning where it's designated on the landscape, in our implementation plans, will not be harvested. And then the forest management, of course, is all in the context of a working forest or an active management framework. So if we key off of that 30 to 50% complex structure and move to implementation plans, the implementation plans are now expressing a little bit more clearly and with spatial commitments, where we're going to manage for that complex structure. So we call that our mapped landscape design for complex forest development. In our various plans, that ranges from 30 to 45% of the landscape that is being managed to create that complex structure over time. The landscape design is created collaboratively with resource specialists, and it establishes the implementation plans also establish the average annual harvest objectives. So getting clearly a little bit more specific, and with its both temporal and spatial commitments than are as expressed in the forest management plan. And then the annual operating plans flow from those commitments that are in the implementation plans. So really it's designed to achieve our implementation plan objectives. So some examples would be harvest prescriptions that are aligned with the mapped desired future condition, and harvest goals that achieve the average annual harvest objective. So with that, I'd like to just take a pause, covered a lot there, and answer any questions that you might have.
Brenda, looks like she has a question or comment.
Liz, thanks for that. Could you go back a slide, please? Thank you. So, you know, the one of the goals, or several of the goals, that we need to report out to as key performance measures are how well we're doing at producing income. And the other is the proportion of the landscape and complex forest, as you've outlined here, where the operational plan helps to achieve the tactical plan goals and the tactical plan implementation achieves the strategic plan goals. So my question is, can you tell us how ODF is doing, how state forests are doing in terms of achieving that 30 to 50% or whatever the goal is, and what that trend has been over time?
Yeah, thank you, Brenda. A couple things. At this point, there are a couple ways that we can do that. The one that the metrics that are currently in place are reported through our biennial budget to the legislature, so every 2 years, and we characterize, you're exactly correct, two metrics, the percent of the landscape in complex structure, and then the percent increase in revenue over the previous year is the financial metric, and then the legislature actually sets those targets. And so at this point, based on some recent revisions to our stand level inventory, our growth, which includes growth and yield modeling, as well as mortality assumptions, et cetera, estimates that roughly 10% of the landscape is in complex design, or excuse me, is in complex structure. Now, if you look at the trends in those they're called key performance measures in our biennial budget. And if you look at the trends of those over time, it is a significant difference than before we revised our stand level inventory. So before we revised our stand level inventory, we're up at a higher level, somewhere in the vicinity of 16%. So it shows a rapid change, if you will, in complex structure, but we are confident that that's primarily associated with the change in the modeling. So that's a snapshot in time. As far as the trends, there's a couple of places for that. One is that in our forest management, in our implementation plans, the districts estimate how long they think it will take to move from the current conditions, which again were characterized nearly 10 years ago for most of these plans are expiring in the next year, how long they think it would take to get to the goal for their district. And that ranges across our districts from, I would say, roughly 60 to 100 years. And the variation there has everything to do with what the characteristics are on those landscapes. So what are they starting with? And then what's affecting growth and forest conditions? And that varies widely across our ownership.
So thanks, Liz, for that. I appreciate that. So my interpretation is that we don't know what the trend is at this time for complex forests, and we don't know how long it will take to reach that, except that it's probably anywhere from 60 to 100 years. Is that correct?
I think that that's a fair statement.
Thank you.
Justice has a question or comment.
Yeah, so... But Liz, can you talk a little bit more about the mapped landscape of this complex forest development? I think it's understandable that it takes a very, very long time to reach complex structure. I guess we talked a little bit about the criteria which pushes that into that definition. And I know the revision of the forest management plan is going to look at that. Could you give a little explanation of that for me?
just to make, certainly, thank you. Thank you, John. I just want to make sure I understand your question, which is to describe, provide some perspective on how the mapped landscape design is created.
Yeah. Why are those chosen? Why is that 30 to 45? You know, what is the criteria by which those lands are chosen? And then secondly, I know that we're talking about the criteria, and I know there's some very specific criteria that have to be met to qualify for complex structure. That's my understanding. I just want to make sure that's correct.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm going to turn it over to Ron to answer that question.
Good afternoon, Chair Amundson, State Forester Doherty, members of the board. Joe, to answer your question a little more specifically, so the landscape design is a collaborative process that looks holistically at the landscape and takes into consideration a variety of factors. So it's really looking at the key resources on the district and the current condition of the forest and developing a landscape design that provides for a variety of benefits over time, which include patch size distribution, connectivity amongst patches, forests and different vegetative types, different elevation zones, considers proximity to neighbors and what their management objectives are, really anchors into for the spatial mapping where we have existing threatened endangered species locations and where we have habitats that are most likely to develop into habitats for species of concern. So those are the fundamental building blocks, and it's done collaboratively with our district staffs and our staff specialists. And we include ODF&W in those conversations as well when we're mapping those landscape designs. And we also consider how they affect other adjoining districts where we have adjacent ownership on different administrative districts.
Okay, and I see additional questions, Cindy and Brenda.
Yes, thank you. Liz, one of the reasons I in particular asked for this to be added to the agenda was that we had received a copy of a letter that was signed by a number of organizations that basically contended that the proposed annual operation plans were designed in a way that was not sustainable over time and that the rate of harvest was unlikely to be sustainable, in particular that they did not contribute to the achievement of the implementation goals and therefore the direction in the management plan. Could you sort of speak directly to that point?
Thank you, Cindy. That's definitely something we can do today. What I might suggest and see if this works for you, we do have a section here in the presentation that Ron's going to walk through the public comments and sort of where we are preliminarily with our responses. Are you okay with holding that question
Yes.
until we get to that point?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, the relationship that you laid out here is great, and obviously we have a number of our stakeholders that are charging that we're not complying with this relationship between the management plan, the implementation plan, and the operation plan, that our operational plans are not going to lead towards the achievement of our implementation plan or the goals of the management plan. But we can hold on to that conversation until you get to it in your presentation. Thanks.
Yes, of course. Thank you. Any other sort of clarifying questions here?
Didn't you have another question, Brenda?
Just very quickly to clarify, so since we don't know what the trend is for the complex forest percentage, it seems like we don't know whether or not an annual operation plan or an implementation plan is contributing toward meeting that goal or not contributing toward meeting that goal. Is that right?
Well, I think that in that the time for us to revisit that is approaching as we look at the expiration of our current IPs. As you know, this is a multi-decadal process to get to the desired outcomes. I think that, but you know, I also want to honor where you're coming from and what I think that you're saying, which is without a clear demonstration of the trend and where we are in that trend, how do we know that we're meeting the forest management plan objectives? Is that a fair characterization?
Thanks for stating it much more succinctly than I did. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Brenda. With that, I think I'll turn it over to Ron to carry us through the rest of the presentation.
Okay, great. Thank you, Liz. Now I'm going to walk you through an overview of the State Forest Annual Operations Planning process. Although it's an annual plan, it's developed over a multi-year time frame in a collaborative way. You know, we have to do threatened and endangered species surveying, which is a big part of the timeline, but we generally start 1 to 3 years before the actual annual operations plan year with considering candidates. We make sure that the annual plans are aligned with district implementation plans and our forest management plan, and that they result in a fiscal year plan for harvest operations, road projects, young stand silviculture activities, aquatic habitat enhancement, recreation projects, and also revenues to counties and the Common School Fund. You know, as Liz noted, the team that I'm leading is new. We just really implemented this team beginning in fiscal 20. And the team consists of centralized planners, field biologists, geotechnical specialists, GIS field coordinators, and young stand silviculture specialists. We work in close coordination with the district operation coordinators and also other resource support staff here in Salem, such as our staff wildlife biologist, district engineer, aquatic riparian specialist, and our asset manager. So we start, like I said, with an initial scoping process that takes, you know, it starts again 1 to 3 years before the annual operations plan year. District staff and resource specialists identify a variety of timber sale candidates and look at trade-offs amongst these sales to move forward. And I think it's important to note here that in this process, you know, many sales don't move forward for a variety of considerations, including their current stand structure, their stand age, proximity to occupied T&E sites, or other social political concerns, but each of them would be permissible to harvest under our policies and plans. So we go through a very, you know, deliberate process to screen out ones that are most aligned with, you know, putting together a balanced plan. And that certainly was the case with this fiscal 21 plan. Then scales are scheduled for threatened and endangered surveys were required, forest projects for recreation, road projects, environmental enhancements, and young stand silviculture are considered. Then we shift to an internal review process. This occurs in the summer and fall prior to the annual operations plan year. Office and field reviews are done by district staff and resource specialists, some of which I've already mentioned, our geotech, primarily aquatic riparian specialists, wildlife biologists, and our division engineer. And preliminary pre-operations reports are prepared that incorporate input from district staff and resource specialists. Next, we shift to an external review. This occurs in the fall and winter prior to the annual operations plan year. Our plans are reviewed by resource specialists from multiple agencies who give feedback specific to their areas of expertise. We regularly share our plans with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, wildlife and fisheries biologists. We have cultural resource and historic resource screening conducted by an archaeologist from Oregon Department of Transportation. We have recently had the Oregon Department of Recreation join us for consultation on scenic waterways. We share threatened and endangered species information with the United States Fish and Wildlife Service, and we conduct government-to-government information sharing with our federally recognized tribes of Oregon. Then we shift to public engagement. Public engagement really is an ongoing process throughout the year. We have informal contacts that occur at the district level early on in the process, and we have a more formal structure. This year with the planning coordination team, knowing that our plans are, you know, going on for several years and our public comment period doesn't historically happen until just before we're finalizing those plans, and we looked at a way to get a little bit of information out there earlier this year, and as we go into the, you know, next year, we're going to look for some additional opportunities to share information earlier for public engagement. We did add 2 informational sessions this year. One was held in Salem and one was held in Astoria. They were in February, you know, prior to the public comment period, to explain our planning process, the relationship between plans, and what we had, you know, preliminary lineup for our fiscal 21 plans. We then go into a 45-day public comment period. We provided this year a web map tool for the public to view sale locations and with links to detailed pre-operations reports that show the specific sale locations, including buffers within those sales and information on the sales and the pre-op reports to provide, you know, transparency in our work. We share our plans with our State Forest Advisory Committee for review and feedback, This is a committee that consists of between 14 and 15 members that represent the broad constituency of stakeholders interested in Oregon's forests. And then there's ongoing district engagement with local governments and neighbors to share information where appropriate. After the public engagement process, we then finalize our plans, and this is the process we're getting to right now, where district foresters and staff consider public comments and make final recommendations on the plans. And then the district foresters need to approve those plans prior to the beginning of the next fiscal year. Specialist consultation continues as needed during sale layout. Some of the comments, and I'll speak to this, we got were about not having everything, specifically nailed down with every detail during the, prior to the public comment period. But it is an ongoing process where we're continually utilizing our resource specialists to refine our details of our operational plans as we go forward. So with that, I'll take a pause see if there's any questions on our planning process before I move on to the comments.
Cindy has a question.
Yeah, just sort of a question. Obviously, despite the fact that the plan has established goals and objectives across a whole host of activities, it appears to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that much of both your presentation today and the planning process itself appears to be driven by the identification and the layout of timber sales, and there's not a complementary process that drives the identification and the layout of other actions and activities on the state forest, despite there being goals, targets, and indicators for a whole host of other things. Is that correct, that basically your operations planning process is driven by identification and layout of timber sales, and efforts to meet other goals in the management plan are sort of side ancillary activities that may or may not occur in association with those sales, or do you in fact have a process for meeting those other goals?
Sure, I can share a little more information on there. When I talked about the initial scoping process, I mentioned that forest projects for recreation roads, environmental enhancement, and Youngstown silviculture were considered. That carries through the entire planning process. We have separate district level recreation plans. We have very specific, tracking for our Youngstown silviculture activities that we have based on initial planting needs through, stocking surveys and density management or competing vegetation treatments. Those are all being considered by those, specialty disciplines, and then built into the plans as activities and also budgeted for to align with our fiscal budget needs that are there. So I wouldn't say that they're not deliberately considered in a similar context to choosing forest operations. The specific timber sales we have do get a lot of attention and visibility. We'll get to the comments, and in those they are comments related to some of the other things we do regarding recreation, regarding Youngstown management, et cetera. So they are very much a front and center part of our work.
Okay. So you don't really consider the planning process to make sort of relegate all other activities as sort of poor stepchildren, but you think that the process itself gives them equivalent kind of attention and focus and avenues for consideration.
Hey, Cindy, this is Liz. I'll just add on to, Ron did a great job of describing the process we use to implement what is an integrated forest management plan. And so what happens inevitably with conversations like this, and you can pick a topic, is it's kind of plucked out of the larger perspective. And it depends on what any person or entity or group might be concerned about ends up being the focal point of that conversation. But this is an integrated forest management plan, and it recognizes that that this is a long-term endeavor that we're managing actually in a process that's driven by creating a suite of habitat characteristics and structures across the landscape and then managing within that context. So one could actually argue the opposite, which is the driver for our decisions is first, what is our landscape design, which is anchored to creating structure for a range of species by providing a range of habitat. And then you overlay what I would characterize as significant contributions and commitments to protection for threatened and endangered species in the form of owl circles and core areas and marbled murrelet areas and buffers on murrelet areas, riparian buffers that go up high into the network, including non-fish streams and quite robust road management practices, decommissioning roads, providing fish passage. All of this is in a constant state of both planning and implementation. And in fact, any given annual operating plan that hits the streets for public comment has been under development for close to 3 years.
Brenda's got her hand up as well.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for that excellent overview of the planning process. I appreciate that. I was curious, though, getting back to the complex stands, which seems to be my focus today. Are those, during the implementation planning process, those complex stands, I assume, are mapped, and all of the stands that will contribute to that 30 to 40% complex forest goal will be identified and then managed in a way that will achieve that goal. So I guess I'm just curious whether or not these current and future complex stands are mapped and managed that way.
That's correct, Brenda. So each implementation plan has a spatial map that shows where the desired future condition for older forest structure and layered stands is intended to be developed. And it's within that range that exists within the forest management plan, that 30 to 50% for the Northwest and Southwest forest management plans, defines the range. And then each implementation plan falls somewhere within that range. So the districts vary between mapping 30% on some districts to as high as 45% on one district. And that does delineate both spatially the aggregate of the landscape design and within that landscape design discreetly which stands are intended to be developed into older forest structure and which are intended to be developed into layered stand structure. Therefore, the harvest type, be it partial cut or clear cut, would align overall with the landscape design that we would only be clear cutting outside of that map landscape design unless there was an exceptional circumstance for forest health or other unique circumstance, and that thinnings would be designed to align for the specific stand characteristics as they exist and what its desired future condition are.
Thank you.
Okay. I don't see any hands up, so keep on going. Liz and Ron, it's back to you guys.
I'm going to go back. Okay. Now I will shift to an overview of the public comments we received and our preliminary responses to those comments. Sorry about that. During the public comment period, we received 76 responses. The majority of those comments were received in response to an online survey that we offered. A small group were emails to our website, and we received a few letters from citizens and conservation organizations. The vast majority of those comments, two-thirds, 50 of the comments, related to support of planned recreation projects, and others covered a range of themes. We appreciate everyone's participation in the AOP process. However, some of the comments don't relate to the planning decision under consideration. We sometimes get comments on annual operations plans that relate to higher level plans, such as our forest management plan or implementation plans, or rules such as the greatest permanent value rule or forest practices rules, where individual or organizational values sometimes differ from the goals and strategies in our current plans. We also receive comments that confuse state forests with federal forests. Although all of the comments we receive are informative to better understand what citizens are thinking about state forest management, we focus in on the comments that are relevant to the scope of annual operations planning. So the first theme I'm going to dive into is the comments we got on recreation. Again, the vast majority of the comments we received overall were relating to recreation, two-thirds of the comments, and the majority of these were voiced support for plans to develop trailheads at a downhill mountain biking, activity being built on the Tillamook, on the Forest Grove District of the Tillamook State Forest, and in support of a stage trailhead for the Wilson River Trail in Tillamook State Forest. Others requested services, including others requested increases in services, including hiking trails, horseback riding, mountain biking, and off-highway vehicle opportunities. And then we received a few comments related to maintaining public access and reducing the number of gates on state forests. Our preliminary responses to these comments are that we are including the proposed recreational projects that were broadly supported in our final plans relating to the trailheads at those two facilities on the Tillamook State Forest. We acknowledge the request for increased recreational services and appreciate the value Oregonians place on recreation on state forests. As part of our workforce futuring implementation, we recently brought on a new recreation education and interpretation manager. In the coming year, her and her staff will be refining business practices in this new organizational model and conducting strategic planning for recreation education and interpretation programs. This will better inform any future growth in the services that we provide. Relating to gates, we strive to maintain as much public access as practical. There are relatively few gates on state forests compared to private lands. The gates on state forests tend to be focused on areas that are associated with heavy trash dumping or vandalism, areas of high fire risk if we were needing to close those areas, should there be a forced closure imposed, and areas of concern identified by Oregon Department and Fish and Wildlife for travel management areas primarily related to hunting seasons. The next category of comments we got was related to pesticide use. These comments were to reduce or eliminate the use of pesticides, reduce or eliminate aerial applications, and increase communication with the public about pesticide use. Our preliminary response to these comments are that we understand the concern voiced in the comments, and we strive to use the minimum amount of herbicide to achieve reforestation success as required by the Forest Practices Act. After harvesting, vegetation that competes with newly planted trees rapidly recolonizes. Using herbicides appropriately is an effective tool that enables newly planted seedlings to get established, so there will be future forests for all Oregonians as well as the wildlife that depend on them. When we use pesticides, it's done in accordance with the product label and applicable rules and laws. We don't treat all harvest units the same, and not all units get treated with aerial applications. We use ground-based applications where practical. However, shifting primarily to ground-based applications would significantly increase costs and present physical hazards to crews working on steep slopes. We encourage all concerned citizens to sign up in Ferns for notifications, as this is the best and easiest way to stay informed of pesticide use. The next category of comments we got related to climate change and carbon. And the concerns were that planned activities in our annual operations plans will reduce carbon sequestration and make landscapes more vulnerable to wildfires and climate change. Our preliminary response to these comments are that comments relating to climate change and carbon sequestration are generally out of scope with annual operations planning. These topics relate to higher level strategies in the forest management plan or implementation plans, and that there's ongoing work by the board and staff to define authorities and develop policies to mitigate climate change concerns. Current implementation plans focus on our forest management plans, and they result in a variety of forest operations that maintain healthy, vigorous forests, which provide options for the future. Next category of comments related to roads. Comments were that we're building too many roads, and they requested to close existing roads. Concerns over hydrologic connectivity of our transportation system to streams, and inadequate investment levels in road maintenance. Our annual operations plan focused on road construction really just necessary to access planned timber sales. We strive to minimize road construction wherever possible due to initial construction costs and ongoing maintenance costs, as well as taking forest land out of production. We do close roads where appropriate and also relocate roads to more suitable locations to support operations and minimize environmental impacts. We prioritize improvement projects that reduce hydrologic connectivity and culvert replacements that are barriers to fish migration on active or planned haul routes and sites of opportunity near active or planned haul routes. Road maintenance investments are made to support forest operations, protect existing road infrastructure and water quality, and provide for safety improvements. The next category of comments we got related to streams and steep slopes. Concerns were that planned timber sales were on steep slopes and that were adjacent to streams. And we also got comments that all of our geotechnical reviews were not finalized on these sales prior to the public comment period. Preliminary responses to those comments are that we have policies in place within our forest management plan that provide robust aquatic and riparian buffers that exceed forest practices rules and include additional protection measures for inner gorges, potential debris flow track reaches, and high energy seasonal streams. All timber sales have geotechnical review and screening, and on sales where there's concerns raised by our geotechnical specialists or further evaluation needed, we do on-site consultations with district staff to interpret the site-specific locations. Where there are indicators of slope instability, harvest buffers are established that are intended to protect slopes during operations and allow for natural processes, such as allowing wood recruitment through natural stand decadence and delivery into streams. We strive to complete geotechnical reviews prior to finalizing our annual operations plans. However, some field consultations can't be completed prior to finalizing the plans and are more effectively done during sale layout. All geotechnical concerns are addressed prior to finalizing a plan, timber sale for auction. The next comment relates to targets and performance measures and that our plans focus on revenue and lack targets for other forest values. Our annual operations plans are prepared in alignment with district implementation plans and forest management plans, as was already discussed with that hierarchy of how our plans fit together. And in addition to the implementation guidelines that are in those plans, the division provides supplemental annual guidance and process timelines for the completing the ALPs on schedule. Revenue targets are included in annual operations plan guidance, along with guidance for many other forest values. Revenue targets are important since nearly all of our funding comes from 36.25% of the timber revenues, and these targets help inform division budgets and strategic investment levels. The annual guidance also state that not every sale has to produce a positive return to the Forest Development Fund and promotes activities such as thinning younger stands. Harvest units are planned around protection areas for threatened endangered species sites and in alignment with the map landscape designs for long-term environmental goals. And we also plan for young stand silviculture investments to achieve well-stocked vigorous stands in cost-effective ways, as well as priority recreation, education, and interpretation projects. Targets for broader forest management implementations such as long-term forest structure are reported outside of the AOP process in the key performance measures with the legislature that we already briefly discussed. Last category of comments we had related to timber harvests and that we have concern about clear-cutting layered stands and older stands, requests to increase harvests and not harvesting enough. So as you can see, we get a range of perspectives related to timber harvesting. All the harvesting that we do are aligned with the map landscape designs and our complex forest structures that are allocated in the implementation plans. We do harvest some layered stands that are outside of the map landscape designs. And as Liz indicated early on in those planning relationships, that only harvesting of older forest structure stands where they're mapped in the landscape designs is actually precluded in policy, but harvesting layered stands outside the map landscape design is permissible under our policies. We also received comments that were voices of support for harvesting to generate revenue to rural communities and provide timber-related jobs. We also received some comments about harvest sustainability. Harvests in the annual operations plans are done like we've talked about, consistently with the implementation plans and those landscape designs, but it's really important to take a multi-decadal view when you look at the implementation of the forest management plan. We talked briefly earlier on about how long it would take to achieve that long-term desired future condition. And we've been implementing these plans for, roughly two decades now. Northwest, Southwest forest management plans were approved in 2001. In the first decade of those plans, we actually thinned quite a bit more than we clear cut. 60% of all of the harvests that we did in the first decade were partial cuts, and only about 40% were modified clear cuts. The percentage of harvest types have shifted in this last decade. We have been doing more modified clear cutting than in the first decade. But again, you have to take that multi-decadal view of implementing the plans we have, and that in future decades, we will shift back to a higher percentage of partial cutting than just modified clear cutting. So you have to consider that long-term view when you think about harvest sustainability. We have not completed responses to all of the individual comments that we had here, and what I've shared with you today is a characterization of the comment themes that we got and our preliminary responses to those themes. We do anticipate moving forward with the majority of our planned operations, with some adjustments being made in Astoria, where they're considering adding some additional younger thinning, approximately 575 acres, and making some adjustments to their lineup of modified clear-cut sales. So with that, I'll pause and take any questions you have on the comment themes and our preliminary responses to those comments.
Hey, Brenda, and then Cindy.
Yeah, thanks, Ron, for that. That was a great overview. I appreciate that. Just an observation, and that is, you just pointed out that you all have been implementing the plan for two decades. After two decades, we still don't know what the trend is in complex forests over the ownership. But yet complex forests outside of the designated areas are still being cut. And to me, I think it just seems to me that the precautionary principle, if applied here, would suggest that we try to maintain the complex forest until we get a handle on how we're doing in terms of trying to attain that goal that might be 60 or 100 years out. So I just remain concerned about this lack of knowledge about the rate at which we are or aren't moving toward achieving that goal.
Thank you, Brenda. And it sounds like Ron wants to respond as well.
Yeah, thank you, Brenda. And I would say that we do, I think, have a reasonable handle on the trajectory. There's a lot of context to consider when you think about that 20 years, too. You know, when the original forest management plans were approved back in 2001, they had a desired future condition structure range of 40 to 60%. And we started out with implementation plans that had mapped 50% as complex structure. Did a lot of activity. We had a lot of discussions and additional analysis in the mid-2000s. Our harvest and habitat modeling effort resulted to implementation plans being modified approximately in the 2007 timeframe, where we had them mapped primarily at 50% down to 40%. And then that continued on with a policy discussion that ultimately led to a revision of the forest management plan in 2010, lowering the range of complex structure identified in those plans from 30 to 50%, and then redoing implementation plans and remapping landscape designs to what they are now in that 30 to 45% range on districts. So there's been a lot of, you know, change based on policy direction over that two decades. So we are currently, again, mapping and managing around the map landscape design. And the trajectory that we've seen, I think, in the change in structure is, again, as Liz mentioned, primarily related to our growth model and those predictions that are developed from that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. But I also heard from Liz, and it's my understanding that despite the growth model changes, we don't know what proportion of the landscape is in complex forests and how much that has changed over the two decades despite all the policy changes. And so, I mean, that just does leave me concerned.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Brendan. And it's clearly reflected in the comments that we received, and particularly the letter that Cindy, that you referenced. So it is something we'll be handling and working with the folks, you know, with the people that have submitted public comment to work through some solutions.
Cindy and then Jeremy.
Thanks, you guys. I really appreciate your presentation. I think it's been really useful and pretty clear. I've got sort of two prongs to my question. The first one, I think, is a fairly straightforward and simple question, and that is, were the harvest calculations remodeled after the I think it was 2015-16 TURG inventory?
No.
No.
Not for the implementation plans. They were done at the beginning of the implementation plan period. So they were not remodeled as a result of the change in the growth model that we use.
Okay, so then a follow-up to my first question. Do you have any plans in future to sort of remodel your harvest calculations since the TURG inventory really substantially changed our understanding of what was available out on the landscape?
Well, first of all, I'll say that's definitely an integral part of our implementation plans is calculating sustained yield. This position we find ourselves in right now, so I guess the short answer is our focus right now is on the HCP and FMP and the quite a bit of modeling that we're doing for that. And that information will provide some insights of how we think habitat would develop across the landscape and over time under a draft revised forest management plan as compared to the current forest management plan and as compared to an HCP. So it's not in those categories of structure. So I don't want to be misleading at all. It's not in the categories of the structure as characterizing the current plan, but it will project in a modeled world what we think might happen to habitat over time. So that's what's coming in the fall. And it is not, I also do not want to misrepresent that as a sustained harvest calculation, which I think might be what you're thinking about, as well as how does that result in the range of complex structures across the landscape.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll say one more thing. Sorry, Cindy. And the
no,
reason.
That's fine. Go ahead.
The reason for that long-winded answer is to say, our resources are really all geared at that HCP FMP work at this time. And it would take a significant shift in resources to, any questions that, you know, are surfacing here today.
Yeah. No, I greatly appreciate that. I think the whole board is strongly behind putting the emphasis on the HCP FMP process to the future. But at the same time, we are developing annual operating plans every year and have been since, I can't remember if it was 2015 or 2016, but 4 or 5 years ago, we found out that we had that the inventory picture of what was actually available on the landscape was significantly different than what we had assumed.
Right.
At some point, whether we change our plan or not, it does seem like we need to redo or remodel our harvest calculations to reflect what our inventory tells us is actually available on the landscape. Notwithstanding our desire to emphasize our work effort on the HCP FMP at the moment. So that just kind of put it in your hat for future consideration. The other question that I have kind of echoes some of what Brenda, I think, was trying to get at earlier. And that is, I think it was 2007 that the board established a number of performance measures. And that's like that 30% to 50% complex. And I think there was also a hydrologic connectivity of roads of less than 15%. And so, those targets, the less than 15% hydrologic connectivity and the 30 to 50% complex forest were targets to be achieved within 20 years, which is by 2027. So we're more than halfway through this multi-decadal process. And I was wondering if you could give us kind of a feel, either in specific numbers or in inferences, if that's all we have, as to whether we are making progress over that multi-decadal effort to reach those targets. Annual operation plans and decadal implementation plans actually made progress toward the strategic goals of the FMP.
Yeah, thank you. Right. And Ron covered that a little bit in the one slide that had the, where we, you know, we received the comments around performance measures and targets. So one point of clarification, there is a performance measure that characterizes, the desire to have 17 to 20% complex structure within 20 years in our Forest Grove, Astoria, and Tillamook districts. So it's a narrower geographic scope. And in fact, all the performance measures only apply to those three districts. And there's a whole host of reasons for that, which I won't go into right now. So I just wanted to provide that clarification. I also think the target there for the, we would need to double check some of those targets, but I'm tracking with you, Cindy. So, yeah. On the performance measures piece, there are challenges that we have not continued to track those. And one could argue that had we been able to and continue to do that, that we would be able to speak to the questions that you and Brenda are raising. So, at this point, other than the description that, is characterized in the implementation plans, and what we are seeing with the stand level inventory, that's what we know about where we are and where we think at 10 years ago, where we thought we would be heading. So, that's where we are at this point.
Okay, so then just an observation. It appears, sort of as I'm about to leave the board here, that we've got some sort of structural issues that we need to be really cognizant of as we go forward, whether we're continuing to live under the existing FMP or we develop and approve a new HCP-FMP combo, or we don't do the HCP and we do a new FMP. Whatever direction the board ends up taking in the future after I'm gone, the fundamental structure and relationship between the plan, the implementation plan, and the annual operation plan assumes that we are, with our annual operation plans, actually making year-by-year progress towards the goals set in the management plan, and yet we don't seem to have been able over the last 20 years to actually track that. And I think that disconnect in information makes it pretty impossible for the board to know whether or not the guidance that the board is establishing either in board policies or in its approval of an FMP is being implemented on the ground, whatever that guidance happens to be. And I know, in fact, you know, we're already talking about it when earlier today we were discussing some of the implications of reduction in budget because of the COVID impacts on state financing. But what it ends up resulting in, if we eliminate the funding for the monitoring but proceed forward with the management actions, is that we're running blind. We don't know whether or not we are achieving the things we want to achieve. And so I would suggest both to Liz, your staff, and to the board members that are going to carry on after I depart, to give some real serious thought to whether or not that is an acceptable way of conducting business. Stabs in the dark are unlikely to allow us to achieve the goals that we set out for ourselves. And at a fundamental level, I think future implementation needs to honor the assumed connections between the management plans, the implementation plans, and the annual operation plans truly do exist. But without monitoring and tracking, there's no way any of us or our public stakeholders can know if we truly are making progress towards our goals or just wandering in the dark.
Okay, we've got two more folks, and we're running as of this moment or over a half hour late right now. So I'm hoping that with these two additional questions, we'll be able to move on. Jim and then Nils.
Okay, mine is a comment more than a question. And, you know, I'm really thinking about why we're here today, you know, with this on the agenda, and am concerned. I think, you know, I guess I'd like to talk about kind of what we're not talking about. And this, if we go, we have this issue, of a lack of trust, from stakeholders, particularly in the conservation community, at this point of, leadership at ODF. And I think that mostly from what I have seen comes out of, a lack of information that is understandable. We've been talking a lot about complex structure, but we haven't been talking about this other theme that we've had, which is the finances. And that's the, you know, the accusation is that made is that we're just trying to cut more trees here because of the economic need to do so. And I'm frustrated by that dynamic where we do not have that trust in the integrity of the leadership. And I certainly want to see that change. And I don't share that, that sort of more cynical point of view, but I do share in the frustration of not having enough information, whether it is about the finances. This is not a new issue, and really being able to answer that as well as the other issues that we've been talking about. And it's just like, Cindy's been talking about of going blind, and it's the same criticism that's been made about the FMP process. So I think the only way that I know that the department can deal with that is, you know, a real focus on getting out and always maintaining a good process for getting out as much information about the financial picture, both to the public, to the stakeholders, and to the board, as well as all the other kinds of information necessary for us to be good decision makers. I think, you know, there's been this tremendous progress where we have stakeholders working together and putting together the MOU, but I still see something that can be very damaging for our future if we're not working from a better place of trust with our core stakeholders.
Thanks.
Nils? Yeah, and I'll just be brief. Thanks, Tom. And just to lend my voice that I think this is important. And Liz and I have had several phone calls about this, and including one, a joint call between Liz and I and Brenda. And it is very important that we figure out a better way to report about trends and progress or challenges and adjustments against the management plan, and that the current board understands both the current operating direction that the plan is providing the department, and that the department can at the appropriate level and frequency provide information back to the board to provide that clarity and maintain confidence between the board and the department and then with the public. So I just lend my voice to say I think it's really important we figure this out.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. We're going to take a 5-minute break. So that's 3:23 by Apple time.